Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Providing insight and resources for your spiritual journey. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So, hello and welcome to today's show on World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Stornoway on the Isle of Lewis in Scotland. I'm joined by my wife, Wendy. Hi, Wendy.
Hello.
We're glad to be here. This is week number four in our 10-part series, coming from all parts of the world. So world spirituality is on the road. And for the last several weeks, we've been in Scotland and exploring it in depth. We just spent a remarkable 8 days on the wild west coast of the Isle of Lewis. And now we're in the relative urban splendor of the pleasant town of Stornoway. And it's been nice, actually, to be in the wilds and then to come back to Stornoway a little bit and enjoy the beautiful town that it is. And there's an old castle here that the person who owned Lewis back in the day planted up a huge area around the castle with the forests. And so you can now walk around through those forests and walk down by the sea, and there's a river, and very, very beautiful. So that's been enjoyable. And we're in a sail loft right on the harbor and looking out at the castle. Just mentioned, in front of us is the marina and the fishing boat docks, and there's a fish market next to our apartment. That's been one of the fun things, is enjoying the local seafood. There's these thing called langoustines, which are like large shrimp or prawns, and they're tasty. And then, of course, crab and lobster and all kinds of seafood, sea fish like halibut and mackerel, herring, you name it. There's all kinds of things here and they're all extremely fresh, so that's been fun. I think we're going to go and get ourselves some halibut fish and chips after the show today. By the time we leave Lewis, we'll have been here for 2 weeks, and that's been good in terms of our sabbatical and helping us really see and feel a place. You know, I've done both ways of seeing things, you know, the tourist route or the traveling route. And if you only got a few days, tourism is great. But what you miss there, I think, is going a little deeper, a little bit more immersion into the place and the people and the setting versus just sightseeing, which is when you're sort of passing by briefly. And, you know, you see a lot there, and I'm not knocking it, but it's nice if you've got the opportunity to feel the scenery and the way it all works here, because the Lewis is a very interesting place. It's quite desolate in some regards, and yet you have these huge bogs, blanket bogs, and yet then right next door to them are beautiful cliff scenery and beaches. And I know, Wendy, you've really enjoyed the beaches, haven't you?
Yes, I think the highlight of the island for me has been the beaches. They are Caribbean blue, beautiful sand and beautiful blue, and a pleasure to look out on. And we were surprised. We were watching some kids rig their sailboats, and I thought, those children are standing in that water. They have got to be just freezing cold. And when we actually went down and put our hand in it, we realized it's not cold at all. Of course, the wind blowing on you is cold, but the water itself was quite warm. But the beaches are beautiful.
I think we were lucky too, because we're on a beach where there was a lot of shelving, and so it got very shallow and warmed up in the sun. But some of the beaches just straight into the sea and into the depth of the sea, and sea's still pretty cold. I wouldn't want to swim here. We met a friend up here who was staying with us at John Angus's house, and he was a surfer from California. And all he wanted to do, well, not all, but one of the things he really wanted to do was go surfing. And so he was able to surf because he needed a wetsuit to do that, but he had a good time.
And I have to say that being a sailor myself, I am studious of the water conditions, and it would really take a different approach to nature sailing in cold water like this is up here, versus the warm water that I'm so used to in Texas and in the southern part of the United States.
One of the things I love, of course, is birds, and we've been blessed with seeing so many birds of different kinds. We were watching the gannets doing their thing the other day. They sail around up in the height, about say 60 to 80 feet, maybe more than that, above the water. And then they find the fish and they dive, like dive bomb. And you see their large, long wings balled up, and they just go into that water at several, I don't know, must be 70 or 80 miles an hour, but they get their fish. But they are beautiful birds. I think they're one of the largest seabirds that there is. Beautiful white with a yellowish head, and then black wingtips. And although they're ungainly in some ways, they're also very elegant. You know, they're huge birds, and just watching them do their thing was very beautiful. And today we had a particular highlight because we went down to the Isle of Harris, which is or Harris, I should say, because it's part of Lewis, but it's the south part of the island, and it's very mountainous, very desolate. There's very few people there, and it's well known for its golden eagles, and we were blessed to see four golden eagles today. We saw one when we were arriving, went to the bird observatory that's deep into the glen, and saw nothing there. And then when we came back, just as we were heading up a hill, I took a photo. Just after that, there was three golden eagles cruise right over our heads, and we were able to watch them for a while. And so that was particularly wonderful because golden eagles are fairly rare. They've been persecuted and have now come back a little bit like the American eagle. You know, back in the day, there weren't that many. Now they've come back. And same thing's happening for the golden eagle. So that was outstanding. One thing I've enjoyed, too, is meeting so many people, right? We've bumped into all kinds of folks, whether they be other Americans, or we took two German young German boys around the island with us one day because they didn't have a car, so we invited them to join us as we explored some of the more rugged areas that they couldn't have got to otherwise, and that was fun. And we also met a Scottish tower climber. He worked for some utility company. He was going around the island, telephone, right, installing the new style, whatever it was, link ups, and he climbed towers, and he was telling us about how he and his friends skydived and base jumped and et cetera, et cetera. More than I would ever do, but I'm glad there are people who are willing to do that kind of thing.
And then we met the two American sailors last night that off of one of the salvage boats that's here in the port.
Yeah, there's a U.S. Navy salvage ship boat, whatever you call it, about 250 feet, beautiful boat, and it can haul up all kinds of things if necessary. So it works for the U.S. Navy, and they just happened to be passing by. We said hello, we had a nice long chat with them, both intelligent, good-hearted people. So it was nice to come across some of our service personnel here in Stornoway. So it's good to know that the good influence of America is around the world here, because they seem like very down-to-earth, lovely people. We also bumped into a couple of British people who were on the spiritual quest, and they knew a lot about unity ideas. And I've read many books by people like Pema Chodron and others. And so I went to different ashrams and this, that, and the other. So that was good to hook up with them. And I wished, in a way, that it had been on a Tuesday so they could have joined us for a show, but it doesn't always work out that way. So what's the most, you mentioned beaches, Wendy, what's the most outstanding thing that you found over these last 2 weeks on Lewis? What are you going to remember, do you think? Of course, it's hard to tell, isn't it? Because until it happens, you don't know what's going to be the most memorable. But right now, what's moved you the most?
Well, I think that probably the clouds and the changing weather. The clouds almost give, or they do give, a 3D presence. And when you take a picture, you think, wow, because it looks 3D because of the dark clouds and the light clouds. But not just the clouds. The other thing that I think Paul and I keep on noting is the colors. The golden green color is throughout the island, and then the beautiful blue aqua beaches is and water by the beaches is just beautiful also. So I would almost say that it's the outstanding colors of the island that I will remember.
Yes, me too, because there's something about the northern climes, you know, and I think that's true. If you go to Canada or the Pacific Northwest, you have that same clarity of light. It's different from southern light. Southern light is more glazed and beautiful in its own way. In Texas, where I'm from, we have the light that's similar to south of France or Morocco or somewhere like that. It has a certain quality, and, you know, the Impressionist painters captured it well. But this northern light is different. It's full of water, I guess. It's limpid, and it's ever-changing. I think that's the thing that I'll remember is just wait around. You can have a shower of rain, it's over, and then the sun comes out. You've got this glorious light that fills the hills and the glens. And no wonder everything is sopping with water, the bogs and everything, because it's constantly raining, at least, or drizzling sometime or another during the day. But it never seems to be enough to stop you doing anything. It's just, it's there. It's part of the landscape. But the light, yeah, is particularly beautiful, isn't it? And I think we've hopefully captured a few pictures. Again, check out my Facebook and Wendy's Facebook, Paul John Roach or Wendy Van Roach, Wendy Lee Roach, and again, if you want to email us, or email me at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. Always interested in what you're thinking and how this these shows are going. If there's something you'd like to see that we're not doing,
I just want to clarify, by the way, that Paul said in Texas. He means where he located. He is not from Texas, if you can't tell by the accent. So we Paul is from Wales, and after traveling through Wales, also we keep on comparing Wales and Scotland and their similarities to each other, but interesting just how close they are to each other and location, but just how different they are and the nuances of any particular place that you happen to be. With your eyes open, you see some beautiful differences and can appreciate those things.
We, of course, went to the Calamish stones, which are some of the most important stone circles in Europe. They're extremely beautiful, number one, but they're also one of the most, well, almost the best preserved, I think, that you can find. Although we were staying at John Angus's house, and there was a Frenchman from Brittany, and I mentioned the Carnac stones in Brittany, and he said, well, Connacht stones are much bigger and better than the ones at Kelmis. So, okay, good. I'm glad he enjoys his own stones. But the Callanish stones are exceptionally beautiful. And so are the ones in Brittany.
It's the
Stonehenge as well. But a number of people have been asking me, you know, what's the significance of the stones, the stone circles? And the simple answer is nobody really knows, because we got educated guesses, but there's nobody can say definitely and definitively what they were used for. But they seem to have some religious or ritual significance, and a lot of people believe that they're tied to the sun and the moon and the cycles of the sun and the moon, and so they were some kind of astronomical figuring system, but it's probably because they were in tune with the seasons and the sun and the moon that they built the stone circles in the way that they're put together. The stone circles of Callanish are made of gneiss, G-N-E-I-S-S, gneiss rock, which is extremely ancient, I believe, and it's a kind of a lightish gray with striations in it, and over the years it's got even more patina on it. And those stones look exceptionally ghostly and wonderful when you look at them, and each one has a character of its own. Some people say they're almost like figures that have been set in stone, and you know, at dark of night or when the moon comes up, they start dancing together. It wouldn't surprise me. But they certainly are very beautiful, and there's one stone in the middle that's much larger than all the others, so it's almost like the stones are dancing around the central stone.
One of the things that the stone circle reminded me of was the story that I had heard about the Native American Indians and how they have power circles where each person is in charge of something. Like one person might be in charge of housing, the other person might be in charge of crops, the next person might be in charge of relations, and et cetera, et cetera. And so everybody would when there was something to be decided upon, all those people would or chiefs or whatever would get in the circle, and they would go around the circle, and everybody would have their input, and they would continue to go on until everybody was satisfied with what the action was going to be. So everybody would have a say, and then everybody would have a say about the action. And the stone circle sort of reminded me of that, because like Paul said, they have different characters. Each one of the stones itself, they're like different characters, and like everybody has a piece of the puzzle there.
One thing about it is that I can't remember the exact date, but about 1,000 years before Christ, BCE, there was a movement where they left the stones. They no longer considered them holy. So after about 2,000 years of worshipping around these stones, they were neglected. The farmers even plowed over the area where the stones were. So something happened. There was a shift. We noticed this in Scarabray at the Neolithic tombs, Neolithic homes there, that they were abandoned about the same time. So I don't know if there was a shift to a new way of thinking. Maybe the Bronze Age came in, and so there was a different way of looking at things. But some large shift happened. Maybe it was a climate change. I don't know. But something happened, and they no longer were given the same sanctity that they'd had before. So things move on, and it reminds me of today, where, you know, we've had tradition, but sometimes it's good to do a new thing. And I'm proud to be part of the New Thought movement, because we take some of the good from the past, but we're not limited by it, and we see things in a new light. And I think that's always salutary for everybody, not to stay stuck just because it's a tradition, that we don't have to give full credence to it if we've come to a deeper understanding. We'll talk more about that in the second part, because I want to talk about an article I read about Adyashanti, the enlightened teacher from California, and some other things. But let's take a break, and we'll come back after these messages from Unity. Join us in a couple of minutes.
You like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
Notice how the funniest things happen when we stop taking ourselves too seriously and step out boldly? Listen to Funniest Thing with Daryl and Ed as these unlikely saints administer a refreshing dose of laughter and love that will inspire you to step out boldly and experience the funniest things. Join the discussion with Daryl and Ed live every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Central Time on Funniest Thing, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
What if you could experience vibrant health, help heal the planet, and be a great friend to God's animal kingdom through simple choices you make at breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Authors Victoria and Adair Moran say you can do this easily, affordably, and deliciously in their new book, Main Street Vegan. Everything you need to know to eat healthfully and live compassionately in a real world. Loaded with practical tips, straightforward information, and fabulous recipes, Main Street Vegan will help you on your journey toward a plant-based diet. The perks include more energy, an easy way to keep your weight where you want it, feeling younger as you grow older, and maybe even a boost to your spiritual life. Purchase Main Street Vegan from BN.com, Amazon.com, or your favorite bookseller.
Been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
You there? All right, welcome back to the second part of today's show. We're still on the, Wendy and I are still on the Isle of Lewis and thoroughly enjoying ourselves. I'm just looking at some of the pictures that Wendy's got on her computer here, just blowing my mind that we've actually been blessed to be here in such a wonderful place, except that I also know that everywhere is pretty amazing, you know, because that's part of the lesson, I think, is that when you attune to any one place, you realize everything's beautiful. I think about the Texas sunsets from where I live, and normally, and how beautiful parts of the Metroplex are, you know, in Texas. So everything has value, and so it's not like escaping to some place and saying, "Oh, I wish I could live here forever." No, it's reminding yourself that the same quality is everywhere present. And Wendy and I have been talking about a few spiritual subjects this week. As part of our sabbatical, we wanted to make it a spiritual journey and adventure as well as just seeing things. And one of the things that seems to be very important is this idea of clarity of focus, you know, being able to see clearly. Sometimes you can't do that until you come apart a while. And I'm a big advocate of every day coming apart a while to reflect, whether in meditation or prayer or simply quiet time, just to stop, you know, to stop the endless flow and chatter sometimes of our minds and to be still and listen to that still small voice, because it's very salutary to do so. We're talking about balance, right? The nature of, you know, what are we meant to be as human beings? And I think it's compassionate is extremely important. And yet also you can't just be totally open. You have to have some healthy boundaries so that the otherwise you become an enabler. And it's balancing the healthy boundary with the sense of compassion and large-heartedness. And the same way we talked a lot about, I know Wendy's got a lot to say about this, honesty with kindness too, because sometimes you can be too kind. You know, there has to be also that gift of honesty, which for some reason or another we don't want to give sometimes because it's not expedient for us to be honest. It's going to cause bother. Maybe they won't like us anymore. But if it's done in a skillful way, I think honesty can be very helpful to ourselves and others.
Well, I was the difference in between. Boy, there is a big difference in between compassionate and being codependent. And codependency is not helping to anyone. Allowing somebody's antisocial behavior to permeate a situation, for instance, is maybe one of the ways of if you're act compassionately towards the person, then you can address that maybe the anger that's behind the antisocial behavior. You can see that person, you know, to address the issue honestly and openly without judgment towards the person, but helping the person see, for instance, like if there's some type of antisocial behavior going on. Versus somebody that's codependent, or if you're being codependent with it, is that you don't say anything because you're afraid that there's a motive behind it. There's a, you know, if I say something, I'm going to rock the boat or make the person angrier, or what good is it going to do? So there's a difference in between being honest with the situation and refraining from judgment and being silent and codependent and allowing antisocial behavior, for instance, to further itself.
Right, and we've had a couple of opportunities to practice that a little bit. I don't want to go into any details because that's kind of a private matter here. But interesting, wherever you go, you know, there's people. And and so there's things come up, and wherever we go, we're people. So things come up for us as well, so that's been interesting. But it's good to have that awareness of where is that balance. And I was reading an article, as I mentioned earlier, about Adi Ashanti, who's a teacher that many people may know. He lives in California, written a number of books. One of them is called Emptiness Dancing, which is a beautiful one. He's a non-dualist, you could say. And for many years was a Zen Buddhist, but released that in a way because he moved beyond it, I guess. And the article talked about his movement beyond the structures of Buddhism after he received his awakening. And he is, for many people, an awakened master, whatever that means. And a former a bicycle mechanic, I believe he was. But now spends his time teaching, and very interesting person. But I like what he says, and that is he didn't let Buddhism go. It just was not necessary anymore. It was like scaffolding. And he found that Buddhist practice, although it talked a lot about enlightenment, didn't lead to enlightenment because it helped us stay stuck, in a sense, in the practice itself, in the system, and all systems must go eventually. I think he was sitting in meditation one day and heard a bird singing outside his window, and he was called to and asked the question, who is listening to this? And he realized that he wasn't there, really. It's just a bunch of senses were there, but the bird and himself were one. There was no real distinction, and he understood that everything indeed was one, that he was part of the room, part of the sky, part of the song of the bird, and there was no distinct sense of self. So he realized that he was empty, that he was nothing, and yet he was everything. And we talk about this a lot in Unity, of course. This is one of my my favorite things to talk about, this idea that we are nothing because we're just a conglomeration of ideas about things, but with no true reality. But we are everything because we are the reality. And to free ourselves of all these concerns that we wrap around our humanness is amazing. It gives us that sense of deep peace that nothing else can provide. And Wendy and I were talking about, you know, what that feels like. And it's not that you're always in a beatific state, you know, don't have any problems. The problems can still come, but you're no longer identifying with them in such a self-defeating way. They become opportunities to explore and opportunities to laugh, you know, about how crazy life unfolds. We're not taking them so personally, not taking them so seriously. And again, the balance, you know, balance of being in the world still, because we still have to deal with life, but not of it so much. We're not bought and sold by the world. Any thoughts on that, Wen?
Well, first, I think that if you can create a portal for yourself or a gap, so that you can release into who is this person that has this problem or who is this person listening to this bird, that if you can create that, whatever it is for you, whether it's listening to music, walking in nature, meditating, whatever it is, create a gap that brings you to a different perspective or allows you to let go and release, then you can see that what you might have thought before was not necessarily so, that there's a whole gamut of opportunity and other ways of looking at things. So Paul and I were talking about release today, and an interesting thing happened that's sort of interesting how the universe plays little tricks. So I'll let Paul take it from here.
Yeah, we were just going down the street towards the place where we saw the Golden Eagles, and we were talking about musing about transitions and to the past, and how it wasn't necessary to hold on to the past. You know, that was then, this is now. You don't have to hold on to it forever. It can be self-defeating to do that. And I was reflecting on some personal history of my own life, and how, you know, part of my work here in the sabbatical is to release that, and so I can be more present, more fully joyous, you know, in returning to work. And anyway, we stopped the car because there was a beautiful view, but the sun went down, and so the behind the cloud, so there wasn't such a great view as there was. But right then I noticed that a sheep was caught in the fence by its horn. And it was butting the fence, trying to get out. And then the more it tried, the tighter it was held. And I thought, oh, this is holding on, you know. And first of all, I was reticent to do anything because the damn thing was butting is very strongly. And I thought, I want to get hurt here. But after a while, I thought, no, I got to help this poor little sheep. So I grabbed its horn and lifted its head up and twisted it around a little bit, and they were eventually, it didn't work a couple of times, but the third time I was able to free him from the fence, and he goes darted away immediately. But it felt good anyway to rescue this poor sheep from the being stuck in the fence. I don't know how long he'd been there, but he was very annoyed, you could tell, and was ready to leave the being stuck. And but more than that, it was amazing. It was like we talked about getting stuck and holding on to things and then release and the pleasure and joy of release. So sometimes we have to have something to help us release. You know, what is it? I guess for me, perhaps the sabbatical is coming along to lift my horn off the fence. I don't know. I'll muse on that some more, but it was very interesting how one thing follows another. And you can notice this in your own life, you know. When something is in your consciousness, notice what might happen that seems to be in direct connection, sort of a synchronicity event that's happening at the same time and deepens, doesn't it? And it's a confirmation, if you like, a confirmation of what you just been talking about or thinking about. So I think life plays little joyous tricks on us like that.
There was no other way that we would have seen the sheep. There's sheep all over the place, and you're on a two-lane little road, and we stopped for the view. And Paul didn't even want to stop there, really. And then the next thing we saw was the sheep stuck like that. And I believe in spirit animals, and that they come across. You come across spirit animals for a reason. And before we left, I had a whole scenario of frogs that I kept on coming across frogs in the weirdest places, including in the middle of a highway. And it was like, okay, pay attention.
And that was back in Texas, wasn't it?
No, that was in Kansas City we saw the frog on the middle of the highway.
Yeah, but we saw a whole lot of frogs in our back garden, too, because we just put in a little pond, a little wishing well, and the frogs were attracted to it. And so there were a lot of frogs in our recent past.
But there was also the one frog that, I'll say the one frog, I mean, when Paul and I were talking about what did the frog mean and what significance was it to it, and there was a hesitancy of whether to believe that or not, and I sort of put a prayer out to the universe, is this really happening? Is this frog thing really what it's supposed to be? And the next night, Paul and I were sitting eating dinner outside on our little kitchen patio, and we were talking for a little bit, and we just gotten finished eating, and we were sitting there, and all of a sudden there was this really, really loud croak, and we both jumped and looked around, and there was this tiny, tiny little frog that had made this huge croak, and it was like, okay, that was my answer. I asked the universe, and the universe answered.
There we go. The other thing I've been reading this week is the Heart Sutra, of the great Buddhist text. It's only short, but it's very dense and seems to be difficult to understand if you're coming at it with regular logic. But when you apply mystical understanding, it becomes clear. But its essence is summed up in the phrase, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. In other words, everything is without foundation. It's empty, it's open, it's free. And so once you understand that, you can enjoy the forms as they come and go, but you no longer see them as rigid. Name and form are just provisional, and this open emptiness. We were coming across on the ferry from the mainland to Lewis a couple of weeks ago now, and it was raining. Of course, that's not unusual. And one of the guys that was checking us in on the car ferry was wearing raincoats and everything, and Wendy said, are you doing okay? It's not much fun doing this work in this rain. He said, yeah, it's fine. One of the things I've learned in life is acceptance, that one of the most important things. And I thought that was cool, that that's a great spiritual principle, isn't it, to just accept what is rather than resisting it. And because of that acceptance, I'm sure it made his job more pleasant. But it wasn't resignation. It wasn't that kind of acceptance. It was acceptance that, he was smiling. There's good things regardless of a little rain. And I think that's so true. And I'm encouraged by that. And this kind of a letting go of all the concerns and worries. And the book I'm studying this sabbatical is the words of my perfect master from the Tibetan tradition. And there's a story in there that fits our theme this week about letting go. A story of a man who is lost, not in the present, but in not centered in the present, but lost in the future. He finds a large sack of barley on the road. And, of course, in the Tibetan tradition, barley was a precious commodity. And so he came across a bunch of money, basically, in the form of barley. So he was excited, and he ties this barley up in the rafter of his house, so it's to keep it safe away from any pests that might annoy or eat it. And then he lies down underneath it and begins to daydream. And he thinks about, oh, my goodness, what can I do with all the wonderful things I can do with this barley? If I, you know, turn it into cash, and I can get married. I'm going to have a wonderful wife. She's going to be attracted to my wealth. And we'll have great kids. And I wonder what I'll call my child. And that moment he looks out the window and sees the moon. He says, I'm going to call him Famous Moon. And, oh, it's going to be wonderful. And everybody's going to admire me. Well, unbeknownst to him at this time, there was a little rat that was gnawing at the rope that was holding up the barley. And as he continues to daydream, the rat keeps gnawing through this rope until eventually the sack of barley falls and crushes him to death. And so the message is, you know, if you waste your time thinking about things in the future and how wonderful they're going to be, maybe it'll never happen. You'll get crushed by the very thing that you think is going to free you. And yeah, interesting irony there. And he's putting all his stock and value in this sack of barley, which actually turned out to be his demise. So good salutary advice to let go, you know, not to worry too much about the past or the future. And what do you have? You had twist on that, didn't you, Wendy?
Yeah, when Paul told me the story, I said, well, you know, if he was more present, then he would know that the rat was there and would have been taking care of his treasure, of course. But there's nothing wrong with dreaming of the future. But staying in a dream and not taking care of your business and being aware of where you are, the things that are of treasure pass by you, and you can mistake them and miss them if you're not aware of where you are instead of dreaming to the future.
Well, and they become a burden sometimes too if we're not careful. And the very thing that we think we wanted, like money, can become a burden because we can't get away from the money then. You know, we have to look after it all the time. We have to treasure it, and we become greedy. And like a miser, never enjoys their money because they want to hoard it. So the very thing can become the very blessing becomes a curse if we're not careful, if our attitude is mistaken about it. So you have to be part of the flow, I think. I've always been that way in my life before I came to Unity. I understood about the flow and that money and resources and blessings come to you in the right and perfect way, but you just can't hold on to them. Charles Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, talked about, you know, never hoard money. Use money at best as an opportunity for something rather than hoarding it. And throughout his life, he'd never held huge amounts of money. He usually used the money to do effective things with the Unity Ministry. And I think this is important, you know, to let it flow.
We ran into a couple on the beach, and they told us that they had a little antique shop that was down the road. And so in one of our adventures, we saw the little antique shop and decided to go in and see what was there. And it had some very interesting things that were there, and they had been London antiquers also and had moved out to the wilds of the Isle of Lewis and started a little antique place on the side of the road. So we went in and we were talking to the people for a while, and she was saying that, you know, that the prices of antiques had diminished because people didn't want them anymore or didn't value them anymore. And we talked about the young kids, and I know Paul and I, our daughters and sons-in-laws are like this. It's the experience. They want the experience. And, of course, they have to have things in their house, a seat to sit on and a chair, you know, a table to eat at, and et cetera. But it's not so much a collection of things or even having an emotional attachment to something is that they want the experience. And they're willing to spend their time and their energy and their money on the richness of life. And I love that. I love that about the young kids these days, even though still being sentimental about things and having things that are valuable to you are nice, but it's not the end of the world. You don't have as rich of an experience with things as you do experiencing actual events.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know if that's a trend in younger people today, but it does seem to be borne out by what I know of our children, that they're not really into accumulating things in quite in the way that previous generations did, perhaps, and see through that as not bringing real satisfaction, and instead want value in terms of connectedness. But I think that's a good thing, isn't it? That we don't just accumulate so much. We have regular rummage sales in our church community, and the purpose of that is, as much as making some money, is to release. It's help us recycle and recirculate things, because there's nothing like clearing things out. I think I mentioned this in a previous show, that one of the things we did before we left for sabbatical was to move upstairs into our spare bedroom, because we were opening up the house for our guests and wanted them to be downstairs and enjoy, and we'd had everything cleaned, so we moved upstairs, and in the process we had to move a lot of things and get rid of some of the clutter, and actually it felt tremendous doing that, because stuff had accumulated over the years in our bedroom and bathroom and my study, etc. And so it was great actually to just move some of the things that we didn't use anymore, just the recycle them, throw them away in some cases, and it felt lovely to be in another part of the house too, because we could see the rest of the house in a different light. So it's always good to do things like that, to recirculate, to shift your perspective on things, to do something different each day. You know, because we are creatures of habit, and it's good to break those habits sometime and see are they truly as important as we think they are.
And I think that's changing landscape. Traveling creates that difference. But I know also moving upstairs gave us a whole new perspective of our house. And we were like, we love it up here. We love the upstairs as much as we love the downstairs. But we were looking out different windows and enjoying the light different ways, and enjoying some of the items that we don't use that often because they're upstairs. But anyway, so that was a lovely thing to look at things differently. And to, I know just moving something around sometimes gives you a new perspective about the item, as well as it creates a whole new room. And it's like moving your thoughts around in your head. If you move them around a little bit, then a different perspective happens.
Very good. So what's next for us? Well, next week, actually only in a few days, next 3 or 4 days, we are heading to the Isle of Rona. And what's different about that is Rona is only about 3 or 4 miles long and about half a mile wide, if that. And it was abandoned in 1922. And was bought, I think, by a Dutch woman in 1993. And now there's a couple of custodians on the island, and that's it, basically. I understand that some yachts sail to one of the harbors and hang out for a day or so. But the rest of the island is completely free of people. I think there's a lighthouse on the north end, and that's automatic. We're going back to nature. There's a herd of red deer on the island, some highland cattle, of course, lots of birds. And what's interesting for me is the restoration of woodland, because there used to be goats on the island who ate everything. Now there's no sheep, so there's new woodlands springing up again. Because the whole of Scotland used to be one big forest. It's hard to imagine that now when you see all the blanket bogs and all the open ground, but it was originally forested, so it's interesting to see it go back. So it's an hour and a half boat ride, by a boat that brings out. We have to bring all our supplies onto the island, and we're going to spend a week. I think there's going to be one other couple spending the week with us, but that'll be it. So it should be interesting, and it's probably the most remote, though I can't imagine it could be much more remote than Lewis, but it promises to be quite interesting. I know you're looking forward to it, Wendy, aren't you?
Yes, I'm looking forward to it a lot. I love being outdoors, and I love being in nature, and I think it'll be an experiment for us to see just how much we can do without, what we need and what we don't need, and using our surroundings and learning things. We're looking forward to fishing and trying our hand at lobster catching.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And I've heard there's mussels you can go down to the seashore and get, and we can steam up some mussels. I know that's not Wendy's favorite food,
no. But
I'm going to make her eat some. But it's certainly one of mine. I love mussels, so that's going to be a treat too. So, by the way, last week I ended the show with a prayer and didn't get a chance to thank John Angus Morrison for being our guest last week. But I want to thank him this week because he certainly was a lovely host to be in his home for a week and also to be on our show. And we wish him in well in all that he does. And next week, like I say, we'll be on the island. So I've heard that broadband and Wi-Fi may be a little patchy. So we may not be able to broadcast. I'm hoping we can, and we're certainly going to try. But if we can't, we're going to just do an encore show. But I do want to tell you about 2 weeks from now, we're going to have a guest who's a long-term friend of mine and his wife. His name is Liam Genneke, and he's a drummer. He's drummed for Jerry Rafferty, who created the song Baker Street, might be familiar with that, Steel Ice Band and other bands, Paul Brady. So he's a cool guy, one of the great drummers. And so we're going to talk to him, and his wife is a Gestalt therapist, or his partner, I should say. His partner is a Gestalt therapist. And she'll talk with us too. So we're excited about that. That's in 2 weeks' time. So we will make every effort to be with you all next week. But if Wi-Fi whatever won't agree, there's not much not much we could do about it. But we'll keep our fingers crossed. And again, thanks again for listening to this show and all the other shows on the Unity Online Voice of an Awakening World. There's a lot of new initiatives coming to the network and new unfoldment, and I'm excited about that and glad to be a part of that. By the way, on another personal note, I've got two articles in this month's, I think it's the September-October Unity magazine just came out, so check that out. One is on in the Faith Matters column about aging. I just turned 65, so I guess I'm a candidate for that. I guess we all are, aren't we? But the other article is about rock songs and the spiritual influence of rock music and how we can interpret songs. And I interpret The Rising Sun by George Harrison, one of his last songs, and how influential that has been on my life. It's part of a book I'm writing about the spiritual path in 12 rock songs. So listen to that article, read that article if you're a Unity magazine reader. And I think you can read it online as well as in hard copy. So might be something to get hold of. I'm excited about that particular article and excited about the book concept. I think that's about it. Words of wisdom to send to people this week, Wendy. Oh, yeah, putting that on the line now.
Well, I was just, while Paul was talking, I was just thinking of the different communities that we've come across here and the different people that we've met. And it's always interesting. People say, where are you from? And we say where we're from. And And Paul always says Texas, and then he has to explain that he's not from Texas. And most people don't think he's from Texas anyways, because, well, just because, you know, I mean, his accent, like, gives it away. So, anyways, we were talking to a young British gal that she was talking about her boyfriend, and she was talking about how emotional sometimes he is. And she mentioned that he was Welsh. And I told her, I said that the Welsh have a word for it. It's called hereith. And how emotional they can get about just about anything.
Yeah. It means longing kind of nostalgia.
Yeah, so take nostalgia and put it on steroids. And that's how a Welshman feels. Anyway, she was like, "You're so right. Yes," she said. "That's exactly him. That's exactly how he acts." And I said, "Yes, I have a little experience with it. I have a Welshman myself."
There we go. Well, to all the Celts out there, whether you're Scottish, Irish, Welsh, Cornish, Brittany, Galicia, whatever you might be from, this is a shout out to you. And to all the other wonderful people on this planet, we love you, appreciate you, and hope to tune in with you next week. Yeah. All right.
Our community.
Yeah, we love our community of Fort Worth, Texas also. And we'll be back on the air soon. All right, take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org. Just like life, grief is a journey, not a destination. Whether it is loss of life, relationship, security, or simply the process of change, have you given yourself permission to begin your journey of grief? Have you yielded to the gift of grace? Join Reverend Chaz Wesley every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central on a virtual navigation from grief to grace, and explore new horizons of empowerment, significance, and support. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'll light a candle in your name.
With all the paths open to us, it's easy to feel lost sometimes. Although the darkness of doubt and confusion may make the best choices difficult to see, there is within each of us a light that helps to illumine our way. When I stop and let inner peace be my guide, I am surely led to good, no matter what the circumstance. The peace I feel within myself paves any path I'm on, making even the roughest roads more manageable. I've heard that it's not so much the destination that matters as the journey itself. So in the midst of deciding which way to go in life, I go within. Wherever I turn, the signs all point to peace. Peace can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.